Hey guys, we're going to go ahead and get started because technically this is the last session of the day until the evening. And I know some of you have been at it all day and for 3 days now. 3 days almost. So, hey, I'm Alan Green. I'm with NGA. But I should confess right off the top, I'm an evangelist. Okay? I see some other evangelists in the room. Brings back some memories. It's good to see you here, Brian. Brian was on stage for us at our mega festival that we used to do right before Skillet, and what the people remembered wasn't Skillet, it was how you presented the gospel and people got saved, and it was pretty direct. So, I used to be a business guy. I was in sales, and then I started my own business, and then God called me into full-time ministry as an evangelist. But it's interesting, we're going to talk about vision-driven fundraising today. And those of you, how many of you have been through a mission increase class already? Okay, so your head's already spinning. You're thinking, wow, there's just so much information. You know, when I left business and went into ministry, a well-meaning pastor said this to me. Great guy, but he said, now you're in ministry. You know, you don't need any of that business stuff, you know. Just think about George Mueller and, you know, when God guides, God provides. Well, of course that's true. When God guides, God provides. And we trust that. But the things we're going to talk about today that may sound like, well, this is strategic. These are things to think about. Those business principles are God's principles, you know. And George Mueller, by the way, went, if you've ever read about George Mueller, he just prayed and the resources came. But he went everywhere, testifying to what God was doing and telling the story. So it wasn't as if he just sat and waited. He went and told people the story. So we're going to talk about mission. And you all have a mission statement probably. You have a vision. And you started in ministry at some point. In the last session, we talked about an entry point. And if you could bring an additional $100,000 into your ministry, what would that do? And it does remind me of when we started in ministry. So we think of God's givers. We call them champions. And when we started in ministry, we did a luncheon. Previously, Kevin was talking about fundraising banquets and micro events. And we did a luncheon to try to share the vision of our ministry. And a donor gave us $500. We thought that was pretty substantial. 2 years later, he gave us $125,000. So see, all of those entry points, all of those strategies, all of that praying for your champions, it all matters. So we're going to talk about vision-driven fundraising today. And, you know, I've heard this statement before. Ministries will say, I need to raise $300,000 or $500,000 or whatever it is, and I don't know where to start. Development directors, or in some of your cases, if you're founders or sole operators, ministry evangelist, it still falls on you, and it's an enormous weight when you think about raising money for your ministry or raising support. Sometimes you will even think, well, if I just hire a development director, which many have done, and then there's this enormous weight, and the development person is thinking, where did these numbers even come from that we're supposed to raise? Bob's smiling about that. They feel like they were handed a fundraising goal, and it was kind of out of nowhere. So if that sounds familiar to you, you're not alone. It's an enormous weight when we think about raising money, but fortunately, when God guides, He does provide. Many leaders don't think they have effective fundraising plans, or if they do, they don't really follow them. And or it comes down to this discussion when your team is around you. You know, we didn't do enough e-blast, and we didn't do enough social media posts, and we didn't do enough appeal letters, we didn't do enough direct mail, or we didn't go see enough people, because there's plenty of books that just say, you know, if you see X amount of people and make enough asks, it'll all happen. But we're going to talk about a process today for vision-driven fundraising that I think will make this more of a joyful calling is what we're looking for. So as we move through this today, God has entrusted you with the vision for your cause. We as evangelists, though, how many of you in the room, I'm just expecting that you're either evangelist or you're in a ministry that shares the gospel. Okay, well then you know this verse. Should be the verse that's on the screen. Romans 1:16, "For I'm not ashamed of the gospel," Paul says, "for it's the power unto salvation to all who believe, first to the Jew and then to the Gentile." So you've been entrusted with this cause. It's your vision and your cause. God is faithful. Ephesians 3:20 says, "He is able to do exceedingly abundantly more above all that we ask or imagine." And the last part of that verse says, "through the power at work in you." I'm freezing here, so I got myself coffee, so I'm going to take a sip every now and then. So I believe that his work can be accomplished. I also believe that with knowledge comes responsibility to pursue that vision. And it comes with a promise. In Psalms 37, 22 and 23, it says, "The Lord makes firm the steps of the one who delights in him. Though he may stumble, he will not fall, for the Lord upholds him with his hand." So when your organization, your ministry's vision is God ordained and God inspired, you have the very first thing you need to create a vision-driven fundraising plan. And that's where vision-driven fundraising starts. It starts with a vision to go somewhere that God is calling us to go and somewhere where our champions are headed. You've heard us use this word champions many times. In fact, I walked out yesterday and they said, "You guys call your donors champions." Yes, we do, because they're championing the cause, but they are champions. They're the ones that God is calling us to bring alongside to do the ministry with us. So remember that our vision is the outcomes that the ministry produces, the positive changes in the world that result from working together with those around us and our champions. So when I think of that, and we ask this question a lot in our ministry, what does a win look like to us? What does a win look like? Is it a teenager who hears the gospel for the first time at a skateboarder outreach and they surrender their life to Christ? Is that the win? Is it does it mean that the good news reached a closed country through an evangelistic outreach or a one-on-one missionary encounter? Is that the win? Or does it mean a mother in the coldest part of a third world country in India or Europe, she's hears for the first time that God sees her, that God knows her name even in that place? That's a win, whatever it is for your ministry. And as an evangelist, as evangelist ministries, we know that the ultimate win is that Jesus reaches people one at a time, one by one. And so that vision, that might be the vision, but achieving the vision requires a plan. It says in Psalms 21:5, "The plans of the diligent lead surely to abundance, but everyone who is hasty comes only to want." So it requires doing it on purpose. And every topic that we teach at Mission Increase, from major gifts to direct mail to more, we teach it from a biblical point of view. We talk about being deliberate, planning, and executing well on each of those areas. And so today's going to be fun because we're talking about how to tie all those different topics together as part of a comprehensive, vision-driven fundraising plan specifically for you. Scripture shows that planning can be what it looks like to be diligent, to not due to lack of trust, but specifically because we trust in the character of God. We see in Scripture in Proverbs 21:5, "The plans of the diligent lead surely to abundance, but everyone who is hasty comes only to want." What would it feel like to have a plan like that? What would it feel like to be confident to know I'm following the plan that God has led me to? Or to have a plan at all? Many times, you know, when I was in ministry or raising funds, it seemed like it was kind of reactionary. Oh no, now we need money again. Or now it's 30 days we need money. It seems like that a lot of us are in that place. And so what if it was focused, your plan, on growing people? Well, we believe you can create a vision-driven fundraising plan. And I believe you can write a plan, even today, or as you leave. Someone came in today from last night, I think it was you. You already wrote the 4 points to the case for support, right? You kind of wrote them out. Great job, by the way. So you can write a plan that fits specifically for you. If you're an evangelist running a ministry, if you're a development person at a ministry, if you're part of the administrative part of that ministry, God has called you and you can write a plan that will work for your ministry. You can be intentional about including the champions in the growth of that ministry. You can do this. It doesn't have to be 10 pages. It doesn't have to be lots of charts and graphs. I know that we are showing you, do all of you have the booklet you're following along here? Okay, so I know we're giving you lots of resources. And that's one of the great things about Mission Increase. And if you go to MIF.org, you're going to find so many things. And you connect directly with me, I'll be able to send you things on a regular basis. So sometimes it looks overwhelming, but these are purposed. These are resources that have come about through lots of prayer to help you in specific areas. So it doesn't need to be 10 pages and charts and graphs. We can narrow it down so it's tailored and simple specifically for you. You know, in 2008, I was running our ministry, which had been going officially since 1998. And we had just come off of doing one of the largest Christian festivals in the nation. Every Labor Day weekend, we would do a festival and 100,000 people per day would show up. And you know, the news media would say 300,000 people showed up and everybody was super excited. This was September of 2008. Some of you might remember what happened in 2008. There was lots of people that lost money and the stock market and everything took a dive. And we were about $500,000 short. So when this opening slide said $300,000 to $500,000, what are we going to do? It was December and we needed $500,000 by December 31st. And I just was sitting in the office at our ministry center, just like depressed. Like the weight I thought was on me. You know, what do we do? I contact the board. Do we sell the building? What do we do? I got a phone call from Dick Jenkins. He was at the time the head of K-Love Radio. And he had been to our festival. He had seen what God did. He had consulted us. And he said, well, Alan, you know, I've been where you're at. I said, yeah, but I mean, $500,000 is a lot for us. He said, $500,000 is a lot for any organization. But I've been where you're at. So I'm going to pray with you, but you need a plan. He said, you need a plan. Because I just said, well, we trust God and He provides. He did, and He does, miraculously. But from that day forward, we put together a plan. God is still God, even if He wouldn't have supplied the 500. But on January 4th, we had $507,000, I think, that had come in, either pledged. And part of it was because we sat down that day and we looked at a plan. Okay, how is it, God, that you would call us to do this? Founders of ministries and evangelists are called by God, and all of you working in ministry are called by God. God sends you givers, and God does guide as He provides. But it's not just the money. God wants to work through your cause and through your ministry to grow His people to be more like Him. That's why we say that fundraising and coaching our champions is really discipleship. And He's trusting us with His people. So we have an obligation to pursue their growth. We need to build fundraising plans that identify, plan, and track meaningful growth as people take steps in this cause. Imagine with me that you wake up on January 1st, if you're calendar year, and you have a fundraising plan, an attainable fundraising goal. Imagine that you know what you and others are going to do to take steps to reach that goal. In fact, this workshop is unique in that our time together is intentionally designed to demonstrate this process for building that plan. We've broken down each part of the fundraising plan as you go through this booklet. And by the time we're finished, and we're going to give you a lot, you will at least have the tools. You may not complete it, but you'll have the tools to leave here and have a specific plan and process. So you'll be on the road towards your plan. And here's another thing that will do for you. It'll guard you against people hijacking the plan, because usually what happens is maybe you start with an idea and then somebody hijacks the plan and you say, well, then we're going to do something different. This will give something that you can give to your board members, your staff, your champions, and say, this is the plan that we have. And it'll also reveal strategies that maybe aren't working so well. It'll offer a filter for opportunities that you can view that. And it'll provide a biblical approach to fundraising. So as you look in your booklet, page 5, here's a roadmap for a fundraising plan. First, we're going to get ready. We're going to take the steps to identify where you are already at in terms of fundraising and where you're going, which would be your vision. Remember in Habakkuk, he says, I've given you a vision, write it down so that they may run with the vision. It'll be given in its appropriate time. I'm paraphrasing, but you can look in Habakkuk, chapter 2. Second, we're going to get set. We can take steps to set our destination, to identify the organizational goals that you have and the strategic fundraising goals, to begin outlining tactics and timelines for accomplishing those. And third, we will go. At this stage, we're going to discuss how we can live in the plan and execute the plan. This is how we evaluate it and make adjustments. Okay, an effective fundraising plan doesn't outpace your champions. Boy, I have lived this one. Here's what this means. You notice on your worksheet, give you a worksheet in just a minute. You'll be able to look at that on the next page. But all of the data matters, because we know your ministry cannot grow beyond where your champions already are at. So many ministries, and I've done this over the years, we have this mentality of, if we build it, they'll come. If we have this great big vision and then we do it, then the people will jump on board. If your champions aren't ready, you're not going to automatically expect that another 200 donors will suddenly triple their giving because you've added a new program that they'll surely love it. They have to be prepared to be on board with that. This is why the fundraising plan should be in part based on where the champions collectively are, champions, God's givers, and where they're ready to go with the ministry. It's the only way to ensure that the fundraising goals, the budgets, the goals will be realistic. So if you're building programs and constantly trying to get your champions to catch up to those programs, you'll always be frustrated. You'll always say, gosh, if they just would get it, if they just could understand what we're about. But when you approach fundraising from a biblical perspective with champion growth as the objective, that changes everything. Your fundraising needs to take into account where your champions are and that they are the primary people involved in your plan. So we always ask people at Mission Increase to reorient their thinking. And I'm speaking from personal experience after running a ministry for 20 years, that it's reoriented some of my thinking that I'm passing on now to the next generation, that who the primary actor in the cause is. We want the ministry to be on stage with the champions. I'm going to show you a little picture on that in just a second. I showed this in the other workshop. Typically, this is how we do things. You know, we're in the spotlight. You know, we're used to that as evangelists. Wow, get me on stage. And the champions, the donors, are the audience. But that's not really how God wants us to look at this. We want the champions in the spotlight. The stage is the ministry on which the champions can now be a part of that ministry. And I think through that. Can you imagine if there's enough champions that are excited enough about our cause? If there's enough champions that have come to the FMX or the skateboard or any of the evangelists, if they're like, have you seen what these guys do? The champions then are the spokesperson. You're the stage, the platform, and then their sphere of influence, the champions' sphere of influence, becomes the audience whom they're raising the support from. It changes everything when we look at it that way. Next, okay. We know this verse. I love this verse, and I was re-educated on this verse after using it for so many years. Evangelists always quote Ephesians 4, 11 through 13. And I always talk about this. I always use the five fingers. I always go, so he gave some to be apostles, prophets, evangelists. We don't want to use that finger by itself. pastors and teachers, okay? You know, apostles and prophets, evangelists, pastors and teachers for, what does it say? For, to equip his people with works of service so that the body of Christ may be built up until we reach the unity in the faith and the knowledge of the Son of God and become mature, attaining to the whole fullness of Christ. So I used to say, okay, well, we're the evangelists. We're the ones that preach the good news. You pastors and teachers, you need to do the rest of that. Get people ready and equip them and all that. That's not what it says. We're all responsible for that. And Paul makes a point here in that passage. As we look at the tools that are provided, Paul makes this point. He changes it from it being about the works of service to us equipping those to do the works of service. So first, we're reviewing the mission and vision. Second, we're gathering past fundraising data. That's important. And then we assess the current fundraising operations. So this worksheet I want you to take a look at right now. It's on page 7. And your vision drives your budget. Your budget doesn't drive your vision. So as we look at this worksheet, this is just a tool. This would allow you to look at, as you see, there are some questions. We're not going to go through those right now. We're going to let you take it with you. But what is the current mission statement? Why is the world, community, kingdom problem? What is the problem that you're solving? What's the positive change? So it allows you to fill those out. And you'll see in the three boxes in part one, write your mission statement. The next two boxes connected. And go right through that. So next one, where have we been? There we go, step two. So where have we been? This one, you take a look at on page 8. And what you'd want to do here is look at this and think about individual givers who gave $1,000 or more. Write those down. 2 years ago, last year, year to date, current year projections. And as you go through that, that'll give you something about, okay, where have you been? That's gathering the past fundraising data. J.R. Tolkien in The Hobbit, if you've heard of that, says this. It does not do to leave a live dragon out of your calculations if you live near him. So if you're going through past, that's why you need to go through past fundraising data to identify where you've been, what problems there might be, and use this as a tool. I'm willing to bet that nobody in this room will have all of that data available. So this is going to require that you go back, you spend some time, you do some digging with your bookkeeping. Maybe some of you know these by heart, but otherwise you do a little research and put those sources together. You can write a comprehensive plan if you know the strategy that you've deployed to raise those funds. This one I want us to take some time on. This is on your page 9, I think. Assessing current fundraising operations. I want to take a little bit of time working on this one, and what I want you to do is if you look at this sheet, and it talks about income streams, and you've got four categories. So at the top it says giver acquisition, meaning, you know, are we bringing in new donors, non-existent, needs work, adequate, or fantastic, we're bringing in a lot. Individual givers who gave more than $1,000, needs work. I look at some down here, grants. Estate planning, non-existent or needs work. If you look through these categories and just kind of check the box, this will give you kind of a barometer as to where you need to go. So give that a try for a couple minutes. Okay, and you see on the bottom of that, it says activity, and you have five different activities: major gifts, communications, acquisition, nonprofit leadership, fundraising operations. Same thing, you need to kind of measure yourself and where you're at in those areas. Number of face-to-face meetings. I think of us, we were doing great in face-to-face meetings, but we weren't doing well in managing one-to-one champion relationships. So, you know, I might check, we're doing adequate in face-to-face meetings, but one-on-one champion relationship needs work. This will give you something that'll be quite helpful as you move ahead. Okay, I've heard this before. I've heard this statement vision leaks. Be stubborn with the vision, but flexible with your plan. That's from John Maxwell. When we lose sight of the distinction between our plans and our vision that we're pursuing, we set ourselves up for a large case of discouragement. A vision is a picture of where we want to go, what could be, and a plan is the best way to get there. So plans can be flexible, the vision doesn't change. Failed plans should not be interpreted as changing the vision or losing sight of the vision. Plans rarely stay the same. They can be scrapped or readjusted, which is why we're going to have these worksheets, but be stubborn about the vision. We feel like the vision should come from God. How we get there, He's given us the responsibility to put down on paper. I've also, again, heard that vision leaks. So when you're true to the vision that God's given you and you're faithfully pursuing it, your plan can be flexible. Don't miss the vision as it comes from God. Again, Habakkuk 2:2. Whatever your vision is, it should be up front and it should drive your fundraising plan. When it is, you'll find that circumstances that require you to deviate from your plan, you can still remain true to your vision. Again, vision doesn't change. The mechanisms for getting there do. Fundraising goals should be discerned. They shouldn't be arbitrary, they should be discerned. And I think they should be done together. Discerning goals requires focusing on the vision, and it requires an intentional effort to seek God and seek His wisdom. They should be discerned with others. In the Bible it says in Proverbs 15:22, plans fail for lack of counsel, but with many advisors they succeed. I think a lot of times we have a vision as visionaries, as evangelists. We have this great big vision, and we go, okay, let's run with it. But due diligence would say, let's seek counsel from our board, our team, others around us that know us. Does this seem like God? Is this where He's calling me to? That's when plans can succeed. Zechariah 4:6 says, it's not by might, not by power, but by my spirit, says the Lord. Again, my experience from moving to business to ministry is many times, and this wasn't just because I was in business, but many times it seemed like I wanted to go back to the flesh. You know, I wanted to do things in the flesh. And we operate in the spirit, but we verify what we're doing with counsel from others. We set financial goals, we set strategic fundraising goals, and we determine tactics and timelines. Financial goals are determined from understanding previous fundraising data and understanding the pragmatic and the operational cost of your ministry. It's not as simple as just taking last year's totals and saying, okay, let's add 10% to that. It sounds reasonable. It's not as simple as taking the sum total of all your operating costs and just calling it a budget. You may discern an opportunity for growth and leverage those. So if you see great momentum in a particular spring fundraising event, for example, you might feel comfortable increasing your goal from acquisition. Or you may know that a new program is going to be great as you launch it. Maybe you've launched a new area of your ministry. So you say there's going to be a significant jump because I have champions who are willing to fund that. If we look at our next sheet on page 11, this is a sample financial goals. And this is just a sample. It's why we're setting these goals and the rationale of how to get there. So what you'll see there is you'll see some numbers that are already put in here. This is a sample budget, and this is taken from a fictitious back-to-school program. And so major gifts, they show $190,000 last year, communications, $75,500, acquisition and so forth, grants, churches, and then what the new target would be. So they're showing a total of $339,000. There's a reason why we're doing this, and my instinct is as we look through these, we look at the past forms that you filled out so that we understand how to move ahead on this one. So this one, spend a little time, turn the page, and you'll see that it's blank. So I'm going to let you take a little time to look at that. Again, six areas, the same as the previous worksheet, from major gifts, communication, acquisition, grants, churches, estate planning, where you were at last year and what your new target is. Okay, we're going to move ahead. The next one's number four, which you're looking at. Financial goals are specific amounts, dollars attached to your budget. Strategic goals are new acquisitions. Maybe a strategic goal is to add 10 new donors at this banquet. Financial goal is how much additional dollars would that bring in. Step five, strategic fundraising goals. Again, then we have an acrostic for SMART fundraising, SMART goals, and the rationale for that. So this tool represents strategic fundraising goals. In your assessment, you might have said that you've been doing a good job connecting with new champions. So you might have a strategic goal, again, for 50 new champions next year. Financial goals could be increased by that amount of money. SMART goals, specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and timely. You might have had in your non-existent category, a category of non-existent, so you need to find out what you need to do to bring that, to change that. Step number six, tactics and timeline. This number six, when you look at that, it's not going to get done unless you track it. So this is about looking at what activities in your major gifts, your communications, your donor acquisition, and what you'll do to meet those financial goals. Beyond those activities, it's also about the tactics that you're going to use to deploy to reach additional strategic goals. So let's turn your page to, you have a Back to School Ministries worksheet, and you'll see where they use that for some of that data. That's on page 17. So that's the same format as the worksheet that you had. This is showing how they filled in there's 2017, 2018, and the percent of increase, and how they arrived at that. So at this point, you know, Peter Drucker said, the best plan is only good intentions unless it leads to actual work. So now is the time, after we've gathered all this data, and again, we're just introducing some of these tools for you today. We've reviewed our mission and vision, we've set our goals, and now it's time to go to work. Step seven is evaluating the process so that we can make adjustments, and then determining who drives it. So establish the evaluation process, draft the plan, share it with others, and then step nine, using the plan. And now number 20, page 16 for you, evaluating the process. This is probably one of the most important ones, because so often I see a plan that's maybe we spent lots of time on, we filled out all the data, we've talked about it, we feel good about the plan, but now if there's not a process in place to evaluate it, it's not going to go anywhere. I mean, if you don't have people in place and decide how it's going to be measured along the way, and when you're going to measure that, evaluating that process, and how often you're going to do that, then you'll end up just being reactive. So step seven, which you see on your sheet on page 16, how will you evaluate the fundraising plan? Take a minute, look at that. Decide who will lead and implement the fundraising plan. Now, the reason this is important is because so often with those of us who are visionaries and evangelists, we just we don't, what Guy said earlier today, he said, now you'll remember, he said to me, you'll remember to send that form to me. That was Jock, by the way, Jock Moore. Okay, so if I don't write that down, or if we don't have on a big picture somebody in our organization, sometimes we move to the next idea and we forget to do that. So somebody has to decide, it's probably you that says this is going to be done, but then you have to put a system in place. Then who's going to implement? Is it going to be the executive director? Is it going to be somebody else? Consider who else will be part of the evaluation team. How frequently do you meet to evaluate? So you need to make adjustments and say, well, this is where we said we were headed, but this is where we're at. Do we need to make adjustment? Next, it says who recommends and approves adjustments to the plan. Is that you? Is that others around you? Is that meeting with your board? And then on the bottom, determine what reports must be run to track the success. A good evaluation plan answers the question, who's in charge? Who else is part of the team? What reports are we going to run? How often are we going to do that? And it requires that you be intentional to do that, but this is an integral part of the success for this. And that's the sheet that was used kind of as an example. It's a four-page plan, a template that you can use, and you can use this to use as a model for establishing your own. And then writing your own plan. This is on your page 21. And again, that's used as an example from the Back to School Ministry. So we have major gifts. Those, it's saying here, those that would give $1,000 or more. What your actual is, these again are those six areas. Major gifts, communications, acquisition, grants, churches, and estate and planned gifts. Now maybe you have to modify that. Maybe you have another income stream that you would change yours a little bit. Maybe you don't get gifts from churches. Maybe you should. Or maybe your giving comes from another area, but at least use this as a model and a template to move forward. Finally, a schedule and a regular check-in. This is a worksheet that I would recommend that you use as part of a monthly check-in on the annual plan. On this worksheet, basically, you insert the goals and the financial information as well as the strategic. Financial is specific. Strategic is adding perhaps new donors as opposed to dollars. Determine the tracks and the timelines, and then each month update the strategy and determine if you're on track. And that's on your page 24. So what we've given you in this toolkit are nine steps, which can be finally then condensed to a pretty basic and simple plan, even though it looks like a lot of paperwork. But when you're finished with it, you can have a fully developed fundraising plan. I sincerely believe that if you do this and you go through this work, this will lead to increased giving. This will lead to champion donor participation in your ministries. It can lead to joy because people will feel involved. Others that have helped come up with the plan as well as the champions. And that's what we call at NGA and Mission Increase a win. A win for you, a win for your champions, and ultimately a win for those that we're trying to reach for Christ. We say that we help ministries grow because, we help ministries grow because we're coming alongside you to provide the tools that can help you move to the next level. You can become the platform where your champions play the role God's designed for them, and the spheres of influence of your champions can become the audience, and now you have a new relationship. Psalm 37 says this, "The Lord makes firm the steps of the one who delights him in him. Though he may stumble, he will not fall."
So Alan has done a great job today laying out the process. Kevin, if you've been in any of our workshops over the last couple of days, you've heard us talk about Alan is being deployed as dedicated Mission Increase coach for all of you who are connected with Next Generation Alliance. So what I want to do next is just give Alan a round of applause. He did a great job. He did a great job sort of giving you an overview of how to create a fundraising plan. Like he presented, he divided it into those three phases of planning. And so because he did such a great job laying it all out, what we now can do with the remaining time that we have in this session is to do some on-the-spot sort of group coaching. Kevin Whitman, like I mentioned, is the Oregon Area Director. I am the Vice President of Curriculum Development. Alan is ready. And so I would love to just move right into applying this to your own context. So if we could go back and answer questions from either phase one or phase two, thinking about how you can get ready, get set to create your own plan using this toolkit that Alan has provided an overview of. So the three of us are here. We're ready to do some coaching as a team. Why don't you just jump in and start asking questions that can be helpful as you dig into sort of building your own plan. Who has a question?
I'll just be honest, because you know, like, it's really just me and the ministry I do.
Sure.
I have the hardest time. Maybe it's as an evangelist, because I want to always be speaking life into someone going for the gospel. I just do not like sitting with anyone and asking them for money. Everything else I'm good with, every kind of newsletter, I mean, business people are great with that. But I just feel like they went and met with me and they're driving home to one of the wife's like, well, what did Brian want? He wanted money. You know? And what you said in that verse, even in Romans, you know, I'm not ashamed of the gospel. I'm not ashamed of the gospel. And I'm not ashamed to invite people in, but because the church has a misunderstanding of money.
Absolutely.
So I just wanted that to maybe even get anyone's feedback. That's just the heart. Everything else, I'm like, yeah, this is great. I'm going to take a new one and tear this thing to bits. You know,
yeah.
But that's the part I'm like, man.
Well, that's pretty normal, and that's why all the pieces fit together. Like your communication pieces, by the way, I read them; they're excellent.
Oh,
I mean, they're just excellent. Yeah. So then, if we could fit that together with being comfortable,
You know, one of the things that helped me, I went based money to go as a missionary, and it dawned on me, I'm not asking for money for me. I needed money; I just go get a job. Yeah. I'm asking money for these people I'm going out to help.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're giving to me, you know, feed hungry children mine, but, you're really asking for the people you're going to help.
Yeah.
You need money, you just need a job. You can do that.
Yeah. Tell me your name.
Brian.
Brian, were you here at Alan's session last night?
No, I was in one of the...
So what I would love is for you to spend some time with Alan. There's a lot of theology.
Yeah.
You know, think about... take hold of the life that's truly life, for instance. Why do we want givers to give?
Yeah.
Because we know there's freedom in their generosity. Mm-hmm. And so when you think of fundraising as ministry, it is part of the ministry to your champions when they get involved, then it flips your mindset about asking.
That's what I was even catching then, that they're the ones on the stage. And I know when people started supporting, I would wake up, you know, when you're under tents in the snow in Alaska about to preach in 3 hours, and knowing people were praying for you as you're waiting, let me put clothes on before you preach. But I'm saying, but then as I'm going, I could feel those people with me. Mm-hmm. And I think that's
So in the session last night, Alan provided kind of an outline for how to do a meeting face-to-face where you would offer an ask for an opportunity for someone to give, to get involved.
Okay.
And he can share that material with you. We actually have some people who ran out of printed materials, otherwise I would put one in your hand. But that could be helpful. And as a coach, Alan can role play.
Yeah.
Nobody likes role playing, right?
Alan, but, you role play with us? Really?
Okay.
Awesome.
I have
come
with us.
Can we borrow
Alan? That's
right. He
will practice with you. He's got a lot of tools that he can give you.
That's right. That's right. I'm not going
to
get on the motorcycle.
How to structure your meeting ahead of time. I think a lot of times we go into a meeting and we know, okay, at some point I've got to get there. I've got to make an ask. And we all, many of us dread it, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes people go to meetings and they don't ask. And they say, well, I have a lot of meetings. Did you actually invite somebody to give, right? And so he can help you to structure that with that anatomy of the ask tool. He can also help you to think about the kinds of questions that are discovery questions that we offer to say to somebody, why is God calling you to be involved in this? What's your personal story? What's connected you to this cause in the first place? Sometimes we skip those questions. We don't really know someone's story, right? So he can equip you with a lot of tools that will help you to get more comfortable with those conversations. Kevin, talk about role play.
That's one of those things that, just quite frankly, is the most beneficial when we work with ministry leaders, is because they have to become comfortable with the process of that.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that a lot of the coaching sessions that I've done, particularly group coaching sessions, when people come in with fear and trepidation that they're going to have to do this, if they come back and they go, that's exactly what we needed.
Mm-hmm.
That was exactly what we needed to start having the words. To be able to say. And another thing that I'd like to recommend in addition to your work with Alan, one of the things that we talked about last night, and a couple of quotes, is from Henry Nouwen's book,
mm-hmm.
The Spirituality of Fundraising. And that will really...
Yeah.
He also offered to buy you a copy of the book.
Yep, I'll offer still stands. I'll do that. We've got a few, so just email me and ask for the book.
That's true. I described the book. It will mess you up in the best possible way.
Yeah, I like books like that.
It will absolutely mess you up. The other thing I'm going to say is it's a quick read.
Mm-hmm.
It is not an easy read.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two very different things. So read through it, but then you're going to need to go back through it again because it really does. It underscores the whole part of fundraising as ministry, and the ministry to those people who are connecting into the cause is equal to the end user of the program. I love the fact how Henry Nouwen does that. And for you, I really think that's one of the most beneficial pieces would be that, because it really is equal ministry.
Well, even people I look to in ministry, if I just pray and God does whatever he does, I go, I get it. But back to the Bible, Paul literally said, you watched what I did. You heard the gospel
right,
from me.
Right.
You need to support this. And that is
absolutely
a humbling experience to, yeah, so that's, okay, thank you.
Some of these worksheets, even though some of these are new, do they make sense? Does it look like that's something that you could follow? Daryl, you're a business guy, so, but you're in ministry. So.
Anybody have questions about developing your plan? Certainly, you know, what we've provided to you is a comprehensive, pretty sophisticated method for developing a plan, but you may be in a place where you have two income streams. You need to track where you were last year, where you want to go this year, and you might have a one-page plan. Right, Ellen?
Right.
Fine. 3 years from now, you might say, I want to have, you know, a plan that covers all of these income streams. And I know I'm going there eventually, but for now, right, I'm gonna create a one-page plan.
I think having a plan and actually then knowing how to go out and articulate that vision and communicate that
mm-hmm.
plan, that the case for support that we talked about yesterday, along with the kind of the model for what you would ask when you're face to face, I think those are very helpful.
And you can create a plan with the data you have.
Yeah.
Right? That's another thing that I really like to say to ministries, is we look at that four-page plan, we look at all of this and go, I don't have that. What, you know, I don't necessarily have what it would take to do that. You can create a plan with what you've got.
Yeah.
We've created a fundraising plan for ministries who've started with $10,000. And, you know, we start there. You still start somewhere.
Yeah.
So don't look at that plan and go, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to go to a four-page plan. You can create a plan with where you are right now. And next year you can write a better plan.
Yeah.
Because you will be tracking things differently. You'll be thinking about it differently. You've got more data to work with. But don't look at the end result of that thinking, oh, I'm not there now, I'm just not going to do it. Do what you can.
Right. Well, like you said, the vision stays the same, the plans will change.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Based on your vision.
Back here.
Go ahead.
excuse me, actually, I want to find out at what point you engage someone into becoming a donor, for example. Let's say you meet with someone, for example, and do you actually engage the person the donor up front, or you want to spend more time with the person just to cultivate a relationship with the person before trying to bring the issue of been thinking about the work of the Lord.
What's my answer, Tracy?
Start with what you have.
Start with, and it depends.
It depends.
It's
right.
Always the answer to that question. One of the things that we have a tendency to do is, again, with what Tracy was talking about with those talking points, we go in thinking we have to ask. When in actuality, I like to turn that around a little bit, and I like to go into these meetings with the thought of, what do I need to discover? Because oftentimes we go in and say, I have all this stuff I need to share with them. I've got to share with them, and I've got to tell them all this, and then I've got to ask. So when I go in thinking, I may be meeting with this person for the first time. It may be one of those things where somebody said, you should go meet with Joe. I start off a meeting like that saying, Ken said I should meet with Joe. Why do you think Ken said that? You know, and then we start finding out their story. We find out where they're at, and then that leads into further conversation. It may become appropriate to do an ask right then, or it may be that we need to have a follow-up meeting, or this is the action step I'm going to ask you to take. It really does depend upon the nature of how those conversations go.
Can I bring an example up with that? There's an eye doctor in our city, and most people ask him for lots of money. I mean, he kind of knows that. I finally got a breakfast meeting with him. I wasn't going to ask him for money. But I said, you know what we could really use? What, especially my son-in-law running the ministry now, you're quite well known in this city for your strategic planning, and I saw your core values for your staff and all that. Boy, if you could just spend some time kind of coaching us, come down and get involved and see what's happening in our ministry, that'd be huge. And see, if we could get him to see the ministry first, the dollars will come later. I mean, there's got to be an entry point. And so you're not going to know until you know who the donor is, just the question you ask, and you know why know more about him. I mean, you may meet with another guy, and as you're in that conversation, you're like, this guy just needs me to pray for him today. It's not the time to ask for money. Or he might be real direct and say, you know, tell me about your ministry, what do you need? And you'll know then. It's kind of like when we present the gospel, we know it's not on us. You know, we're just presenting the vision, the ministry God's given us, the impact that it makes, and God will work on their heart.
But to get back to your question, I think what you heard from Alan and Kevin both is that you need an entry step. You need a way to invite people to get involved in your cause. So if all of you are here sharing the gospel, how are you inviting people to join you in the work? How are they first taking that entry step in, and then, like Alan said, giving comes. Randy Alcorn, of course, in the Treasure Principle talks about your heart follows your money and your money follows your heart. So we're growing the whole giver.
This is fantastic, by the way. Thank you. This is just like the Huga Hagi and all the I don't know the context of a lot of other people here, but I've been in the ministry now 7 years, working in the ministry that creates evangelistic media to reach the sinners of the gospel, filming testimonies. 7 years now, and I work full time to support myself to do work. And I just started seminary full time. And I have my wife, who's my number one ministry. And so I get about like 10 hours or so, 10 to 12 hours a week to do ministry work. And that's it. That's what I have. I was looking at this plan. I'm like, I could easily spend 60 hours on this, which would be like 6 weeks, would be pretty substantial. And then I was looking at the events, the leveraging fundraising events. It's the one you just did, Kevin, phenomenal. I'm like, oh, I could spend another, like, you know, 60 hours just on planning.
You get seminary credit for all that.
You know, so. Yeah. And then seminary is like, yeah, do your homework, kid, you know. So I'm just curious, do you have like one pager versions of all of these just for people who are still like, you know, I really hope to do ministry full time occasionally, but just where God has me, that's not
right.
The case yet. I have to work full time in marketing and everything. So I'm just curious, do you have like one pager events to like
just turn to the back page? I literally went through the whole thing. I was like, yeah, I pretty much that one page right there, that's pretty much what I needed right there. Just got to the back page. Because, I mean, I know there's a lot of stuff. Like, I've been doing it like 20 years, but I'm still a guy out on my own. I have a board and stuff like that. But it's still pretty basic what I want to do.
Yeah.
And so I don't have to have some huge complicated plan. There are not going to be 15 different avenues to go. I mean, you're going to grow relationships, like, and, you know, speaking to what Brian was saying, and and what he was saying back there, the people who have, like, I built a building this year, people love to give towards a building. They're like a project. Yeah. When that, I struggle to get them to help me, you know, to build a building.
Yeah.
But I raised $50,000 to build a building this year. Well, but I'm $16,000 in debt with my ministry. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. But, you know, like, it's just, it's funny. It's just, it's finding people's motivations, and people love to do things, but the people I've been able to ask are the people that you have relationships with speaking to you. Those people who I've been able to say, I would like you to come in and do this, most of them are offering that amount before, because I'm going to speak too low to what they're actually capable to give. So the one thing I would say is, sometimes your expectations are lower than their abilities. And to, yes, seek the Lord on how to ask those, and we talked about the relationship, you know, knowing your giver, knowing your donor, and knowing what they like to do is going to be able to engage you in and knowing what they're able to do.
You're still looking for a more approachable one-page version of what we've offered, though, right?
Yeah, I am, like, not just the financial plan, but also, like, the events, you know. Somehow, in the midst of all this, still have to do the work of the ministry, you know. For a lot of, like, us, I guess, like, sole proprietor ministries, I don't like calling it that, because, yeah, God has infinite resources, so it's never really alone. But, yeah, it's tough to, like, how do you do the work and then do, like, the simplified version of the financial plan and the simplified version of, like, the events plan and fundraising, because that's kind of the...
We do. Yes, we do have things. I think that in general, the answer is going to be dependent on who are your champions. Who is God already given to you? What do you have in your hand? And do you have a group of people who might be inclined towards micro events, for instance?
Yeah.
And if you have somebody who says, I can tell my story with my sphere of influence, now you have an acquisition strategy that goes on the back page, on your fundraising plan. You have, okay, I'm going to do one micro event with this champion to invite their sphere of influence, and it very well will mean an increase in giving, right? So I'm going to do one thing.
Did
I have a group of people who are giving. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, do the directors normally show up at those events, or are they completely champion-led?
Yes and yes.
Okay.
The beauty of the strategy is the director does not have to show up.
No.
They are designed to be champion led. However, we find that because of the interest there, they
mm-hmm.
they show up, but not to run the show, but just to be there and be in support of what it is that's
champion.
So Jason's right. Yes and yes.
I think one of the questions a lot of you might be asking, if you're in evangelism ministries, proclamation evangelism, is how do we engage a champion in something, you know, like you say Samaritan's Purse, it's easy to say the entry point is a shoebox, but, you know, I remember coming back from Ethiopia one time, and a guy, he kind of got on one of our young members of our team. He said, well, what did you do over there? Well, we shared Christ, you know, we proclaimed the gospel. No, I mean, what did you do? And he asked her like three or four times, and I was about ready to get up and she said, well, we shared Christ. And finally she said, well, we did an eyeglass clinic. Oh, good. Finally, you did something, as if the, you know. So we have, you know, we need to find a way. You need to think about how would you include a champion in your ministry, because it's as opposed to just going to say, well, we just share the gospel. Well, but think through, what does that mean? What are the impacts? What's the story of the kid that was on drugs that was delivered or whatever it might be? And how could you engage them somehow, like they feel they're a part of it?
Well, like Ephesians 4 says, you exist to equip God's people to do the work alongside of you. So how are you equipping people to do what you do? How are you equipping people to share their faith or to share the gospel with the people they come in contact with? Alan has access to a really exciting new set of resources that Mission Increase and the Plow Association have developed together. They did an event here in Portland called Show and Tell, where they invited three speakers to come and provide evangelistic training. So now those have been turned into videos, and we've created a facilitator guide along with a participant guide that you can use to share, to equip ordinary Christians to be a part of your evangelistic work, and it's just on the brink of being ready to deploy. So Alan will have access to those resources as well. But I think that fits really nicely in what your cause is, all of you. How do I get people involved in the work, right? We want their hand to come attached to their check. We want to equip them to do the work of ministry alongside of us.
Mm-hmm. Other questions?
Are you guys going to announce that tool maybe with like an NGA email at some point?
Yes. I mean, there will be more emails coming out, but again, MIF.org, or if you go MIF.org/NGA, you'll go right to my account.
You're talking about the evangelistic tools and videos?
Yeah, those videos.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
The ones from, they're on the...
The videos are there.
They're already on the website.
Right.
Yeah.
If you go to Palau, if you go to Show and Tell, it's not you have to know about it.
So it's NGA and then find Show and Tell?
It's palau.org/showandtell. You'll see the videos. And the participant and facilitator guides are just about ready.
Yeah.
We piloted them in Ohio. We'll be testing them next week with the area directors. Mm-hmm. And then we'll be ready to make them available. So you're just getting, you know, kind of the trailer to the resource.
Or email me and I'll get them to you. So yep. If you have a question on how to find them.
I have a comment. I think that you have to, I both personally run fundraisers for myself, mm-hmm. As a missionary, and I also am on the board of a fund, an organization
sure.
that fundraises, and they're two totally different things.
Mm-hmm.
If you're pretty small, you have to learn how to do it as an individual missionary.
Yeah.
I think that what these people are telling you is call them, get an appointment, they'll sit down with you. You know, when I first was learning how to do it, I had someone that offered to help me, and I sat down and they walked me through every step. And when I got done, I think in your position, like in you know, maybe 3 or 4 weeks, I could be ready to go out and share with people after you spend time with them and they help you with the client. So I think what they're trying to say is call, get an appointment,
yep.
and we'll start helping you.
Yeah.
We've got lots of ideas, and we've helped small ministries and big ministries. But the strategies for raising into kind of individual missionary support and a board-driven organization that, you know, has to find lots of donors
mm-hmm.
is a totally different thing.
Right.
So, you know, let them know where you're at. I mean, my first question would be, how many donors do you have right now?
Mm-hmm.
yeah.
Who
yeah.
are they? Where did you find out?
Yeah.
Are there any churches involved? You know, that. I mean, I could ask you a ton of questions, and then I could share with you, you know, what I think would be a good plan. But I'm not a professional. I just took the advice of the people that were willing to give me advice, and by golly, it worked. I even had people that told me when I called them, and I said, I want to come out and share with you what I'm doing, and tell you some stories. And so they said, well, you're a good friend, I'll listen to you, but I don't think we're in a position to help. And so mm-hmm. we go parking
yeah.
out there to the house, and when we left, they said, call us next week and we'll let you know how much we're going to give. And they said up front they weren't going to give. So, you know, I think that if you go in there with the right attitude
mm-hmm.
And you share your heart with them and they see your heart, you know, they'll change their mind. So,
that right there is the beauty of
getting an appointment.
yeah.
Get an appointment.
Well, yeah, thank you so much. Some very generous, have you ever met a generous donor who wasn't happy? I mean, they're all joyful because they're giving to the Lord's work. So some very generous donors had a heart for evangelism, launched Mission Increase Foundation, joined hands with Palau, NGA, and said, what could we do for all the NGA members, the evangelists that are out there, because we can't fund all of them, But, you know, when I was in ministry, I paid money several times for consultants, and sometimes they tell you what you want to hear. So we've said we want to offer this free as a service. I'm not the professional, like you said, but I have lots of experience, and we know where to get lots of information. People a lot smarter than me have written this. So we're ready to do this. We think that this is something that, again, coaching and consulting and bringing the tools to help us grow ministries together is something that's greatly needed, and we'll see kingdom impact. So
I'll tell you one more thing. My biggest donor never asked him for a dime. Mm-hmm. In fact, I really didn't even know them. But somehow somebody told them about the heart that we had for the mission.
Right.
And from the very beginning, they were the biggest donor, and they keep increasing and increasing. So, you know, God can surprise you in many ways.
Amen.
If you are willing to, like you said, I drove up to the driveway and I told my wife one time, oh, let's go home. Maybe they haven't seen us. It's hard, but when you have a plan, it's a lot easier just to implement.
Well, we want to tailor a plan that fits each individual. Right. There's not a one-size-fits-all. These are principles. So as we're talking to you, then we'd ask some of those questions and,
right.
and say, okay, exactly. What's the plan that we're going to go with now?
Yeah. And if the first one, if they have to tweak the plan, I bet you I'll tweak it too.
Yep, yes.
One quick, really quick question. Number one is, I mean, I don't have a problem with the ask. Mine is just, I got,
yeah.
And it's trying to rein it all in to, like, implement. That's the thing that's the biggest thing. So really, with that question, I mean, mm-hmm. I know Alan very well, so it's one of those things. I mean, is that something where we can call and kind of
absolutely
be assisted? And not that we want you to do it for us, mm-hmm. but just to assist in the development of the plan, you know?
And the other problem that we have is we have a lot of people that, and I think they don't want to say no to us, so they tell us they will do it, and then they don't do it.
They don't.
And how do you go back to people? You know what I mean? And, and it's really hard.
About lying.
I know, and you want to know what, to me, I would want somebody to remind me, because the only way, if I told somebody I was going to give to their ministry or anything, I would have forgotten. So, and we've gone back and, you know, talked to them, and they're like, oh, yeah, I forgot, and I'll do that, but they still never do it.
Yeah, and it's like,
and I don't know what to do with that.
What do you think? I have an idea. So, I think that it's an ongoing relationship, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that you're communicating
yep.
on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
And in the event earlier, the workshop earlier, Kevin talked about a three-pronged communication strategy: acknowledge, invite, report. So you want to be acknowledging anything that they do with you,
mm-hmm.
inviting them to take steps, reporting to them what happened
mm-hmm.
based on the steps they've already taken, so that there's an ongoing communication loop.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I would say, though, in your case is, I wonder what it would look like to consider a monthly giving program.
Hmm.
So that you invite people to be giving on a regular basis.
And that's
sort
where
of
the issue
is. That's where the
we
issue is.
We have a monthly
yeah.
giving program. People
yeah.
can, they can actually do that through our PayPal, and we have people that do that.
Mm-hmm.
But they're like, hey, we'll jump on there. They just got to jump on
and they
on
get
and
an email every
buttons.
Month, too.
What you need to do is show up with a card reader. You got your phone out. You got you can have it all on your phone. You're like, you want to do that? Do you mind filling a card right now? Like, do you have a relationship with them? Like, would you mind doing that? I can fill it out for you, right? Because some people I just don't know what to do. You're like, here's the card reader. Let me just fill it out. Are you okay with it?
Yeah.
I mean, some people you need
they
to go
back
to.
Yeah. Snag. They help.
Well, no, these are people. Like, oh, no, I'll
yeah.
reach back out. But it's like.
And they're all close friends of ours, too. You know what I mean? And it's like, so you don't want to wreck the friendship, but it's like, why?
So I just, we pretty much just blow it off at this point now. Where
yeah,
because
it's
say,
been going on for quite a while.
Yeah, I don't know, but that's.
I thought maybe you'd have, you know,
I think what you're saying is to do the follow, like just to show
mm-hmm.
them, hey, just to keep, even though they may not necessarily be giving,
mm-hmm.
keep having them be aware of what we're doing,
mm-hmm.
which may be that reminder, like,
and you're reporting the impact.
Right.
Knowledge, invite,
yeah.
report.
Acknowledge, invite, and report. Sorry. Yeah.
Thank you.
We close in prayer. Thank you guys for coming. Thank you for staying to the last session. So love to connect individually and create a plan for each of you. So God, we just thank you and praise you that we get to be involved in your work. I pray for each person that's here, for their families, their communities, Lord, their ministries that they've been called to. Lord, we ask that you bless them, you anoint them to do the work that you called them to. Lord, help us to co-labor together in your kingdom, and may we reap a harvest. So we pray this in Jesus' name. Lord, may you get all the glory in your name. Amen.